Welcome into the Wizards group chat. I'm your host, Ryan Oliver, alongside my man, Chase Carroll. Chase, Wizards have won three of their last four. We're recording this fresh off the loss to Brooklyn. But before that, there was a three-game winning streak. We've seen some better basketball. We've seen Jordan Poole excelling at the point guard position with Tyus Jones being out. The Wizards are 14-59 at the time we were recording this. So there's been a few wins. There's been some positives. But first, how are you feeling, Chase?
I'm feeling good. We've been getting a lot of watchable basketball. One of our last podcasts, we talked about a two-game win streak, and that was a big deal at the time. Now we have a three-game win streak before losing in overtime last game and having a competitive game once again. It's been much better basketball. Of course, they've been playing maybe not the greatest competition in the NBA here the last few games, but to come away with wins, even against teams like the Raptors and the Bulls, I will take it after watching loss after loss after loss each and every game. I'm enjoying the competitive product on the floor, whether or not this is leading to wins. I'm enjoying what I'm watching for the first long stretch in a while, if you can consider four games a long stretch. I guess a week or two stretch of really good basketball.
I think the injuries that the Wizards have had have allowed for us seeing some fresh just things from the team in terms of, Bagley was out, so they had to play Rashawn Holmes more, and we got to kind of see what that looked like. Vucevic is here, so we've got to see a little bit of that, very little bit, actually. Surprisingly less than I would have expected, but we'll get to that. We've seen Poole at point guard. We've seen them play small. We've seen Corey Kispert get a little bit more of the load. We've seen a bunch of different things that maybe we wouldn't have seen otherwise without the injuries during this period where there's been a few more wins, and I think it's been nice. I think, when you're tanking, you can't just lose every game because it kills morale just to lose every time. Like, there has to be some winning in there, or you just get guys that are like demoralized every time they step on the floor because their expectation is that even if the game is close, they're going to find a way to lose because that's all they've been doing. And you do want to build winning habits, like how to close games. That's going to be important for the guys that are going to be here maybe long term. And it, that could be Poole for all we know. He's going to be here for the next 3 years. So you do want him to know how to close games with this team. Same with Denny, same with Corey. And obviously Bilal, who's injured now, but if he was healthy, that type of thing too. So it is important to get those reps, and you don't want them to just lose every time because they're not building like good mental reps, good mental habits in terms of their confidence in their ability to succeed in those moments. So I think it is definitely good to get some wins under our belt. Let's talk about a person that's been a catalyst for some of these wins here in Jordan Poole. It's been a turnaround from what we've seen previously this season. You and I both we expressed hope that there could be a better version of Jordan Poole, even though we weren't necessarily expecting it. And I think we have seen a better version of Jordan Poole of late. I want to give you the floor, Chase. He's been playing more point guard. What have your impressions been of the Jordan Poole we've been getting of late?
Yeah, I think we were both really disappointed with how Jordan Poole played early on in the season. I think everybody really in the fan base was, and how could you not? But I think we're seeing firsthand here now that he's getting the point guard reps. That's where he should have been this whole time. And of course, with Tyus Jones on the roster, that didn't always make the most sense, but I think we're seeing now he is better with the ball in his hands. There's no doubt about that. He excelled in that role in Golden State when Steph Curry was out of the lineup and he got to be that starting point guard. He has excelled in that role previously in his career. So I guess we shouldn't be as surprised as I think we are that he's kind of picked it back up. And I think he's coming off really the best game of his Wizards career here this season. 38 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists on, efficient shooting, 15 of 24 against Brooklyn last game, unfortunately coming in a loss, but to me, probably his best all-around offensive game that he's played in a Wizards uniform. So I'd love to see him continue to build off that, but just being in that point guard role, we've seen him be more of a, more of a playmaker for others as well. Like, coming off a double-double and a win against Toronto, 18 and 12, 12 assists. He's producing in that role as well if when called upon. And obviously we have said, or at least I have said, that I think he was better off the bench. I think we may need to reevaluate that now, because obviously Tyus Jones, he has no future here in Washington. At least I hope he doesn't. It certainly makes sense now that we're seeing Jordan Poole really excelling in the point guard role. Tyus Jones doesn't have a contract next season currently, so to be giving him one would be absolutely ridiculous in my eyes. Of course, Jordan Poole is excelling in this role at point guard, and he started doing well off the bench as a sixth man, but I think there could be potential for him to just be the starting point guard. Let's just see it, at least at the end of this season. I have no desire to watch Tyus Jones play basketball for the Wizards, and it's not because he's a bad player. He's very good in his own role, but to me, he's not the Wizards' future. So, of course, Jordan Poole under contract for at least the next three seasons. Let's see what he can do in an extended period of time at the point guard position, because we were all ready to write him off playing shooting guard. Let's give him an extended time here, extended look at point, and see if this is really his long-term position here, and it very well could be. We're seeing a much better Jordan Poole. Whether or not this is sustainable, I'm very excited we're at least seeing it for a few games now in a row.
I want to give a shout out to our guy Damo. He had this tweet that was talking about Jordan Poole. He's young too, and he has room to develop too. And I think that a lot of us maybe are looking at him more along the lines of a finished product. Like, oh, he is what he is. He's a microwave scorer off the bench, and that's what he is. And I think the point of the tweet that Damo had, the point he was making, was that he needs development as an on-ball creator, and that's where he's going to excel. And in order for him to develop, like, you know, we want to see Denny develop, Bilal develop, Kispert develop, he has to get those reps on ball for an extended run during the game. It can't just be in spurts. He needs to actually run the show. And I thought about that. I don't know when he tweeted it, but sometime in, you know, in the past couple of weeks. And I was thinking about what he was saying. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I was really thinking about Poole in the context of a player that was still young with a ton of room to grow. Like, I think that coming into the season, I had this optimism of, hey, maybe this turns out to be, we found a borderline all-star level player once he got to the Wizards and had a bigger role. But when that didn't show itself to be that, I kind of felt like my brain put him in this box of, well, he's a finished product. So what we're seeing is, I thought we could see a better version. And, I made the comment on one of our pods a few weeks back that I don't think he just sucks now. So the people saying, oh, he should be out the league, he's terrible, the Wizards should just, you know, cut him and cut their losses, I was like, that's silly talk to me, because he clearly can play basketball at a high level. It's just, can we get it out of him here in Washington at this point? And I wasn't thinking about it from the aspect of, like, well, Jordan Poole has a lot of room to grow too. Now, maybe there's not as much room to grow as, say, a Bilal has or Denny has, obviously, but he still has room for improvement too. And there's development to be had there, given he's still only 24 years old. So I'm saying all that to say, I think that we've seen since he's been playing point guard that he has a lot of natural point guard ability. And I think I undersold that natural point guard ability. And I even made the comment when he first, his role got changed to six man and people were talking about on ball reps. I was kind of like, eh, like he played a lot off ball in Golden State. Like, is that really the difference here between him being successful and him being not? But as more, you know, as we've seen more, we get more information. Like you mentioned, Chase, it's undeniable that this is the best role for him, at least on this Wizards team. Now, is this the best role for him if he's playing alongside Steph Curry and Draymond Green? Probably not. But on this Wizards team, he needs to have the ball. And I think that if he's going to be here and you want to maximize his skill set, this is what we need to do. It's not easy to get 38 8-7 in the NBA. I mean, you can, I know scoring is inflated and things of that nature, but I think the version of Jordan Poole that we've seen has been a positive in terms of his overall impact. It's not just scoring, it's not just passing, it's not just rebounding, it's not getting steals. It's, I think, because he's able to play more in his natural role, it allows him to feel more comfortable and confident in every other aspect of playing basketball for the Washington Wizards. So that's a long way of me saying that I've been very, very pleased with what I've seen from Poole. And it really does make me wish that the Wizards had done this a lot earlier and given him the keys. Because the thing about Tyus is I'm not as low on him, I guess, as some of the other people in the fan base. I think that Tyus was doing it does his job. Like, if you bring Tyus Jones in and you're going to play him 30 minutes a night, he's going to do exactly what he's been doing. He did it for the Grizzlies. He did it when he was on the Timberwolves. He's going to come in and be a steady hand. It's not going to turn over the ball. He's going to hit open shots and he'll run the offense. But there literally is no more juice to squeeze out of him. It's like what you see is what you get. Jordan Poole, there's a lot more that the Wizards have left on the table that they could be getting out of him. And we're seeing that now that he's been playing point guard. Chase, I got Basketball Reference up in the past four games. The Wizards are 3-1 the past four games. In the Sacramento game, which was the first game of their three they won in a row, Poole was a +7. In the game against Toronto that they won, he was another +7. The game against Chicago, which they won, he was a +3. In the loss to Brooklyn, Poole was a +2. So in pretty much a lot of the other plus minuses from games he wasn't playing point were ne like major negatives, like -21, -17. So he just, he hasn't had that good of a season overall, but lately we've seen an uptick in just how he's impacting the game. So I'm pleased, and I'm really interested to see if this is a this makes Poole at point guard a part of the larger vision of the rebuild now. Like, okay, like we're seeing this. Do we want to go into next season with Poole as our point guard to see if this can be something that we can have long term?
Yeah, I think we should absolutely be focusing on that, especially now that Bilal Coulibaly's out for the rest of the season. That was one thing that I was really looking forward, development-wise, was seeing if we could get him more on ball touches. That's not a thing anymore. So a lot of this last few games of the season can be focused on Jordan Poole at the point guard position. He's cl very clearly going to be an important piece of this roster, whether we want it or not. I'm sure now he's building up his trade value at the very least, whether he's long term here or isn't. So that at the very least, that's a good thing. But I think that he will be here for the next couple seasons, so we might as well put him at that starting point guard role. It's clearly where he's more confident. When he's playing off ball, I think that it's really a mentality thing. He takes himself a little bit out of the game mentally when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, and when he gets it, he has to force himself to do something with it. Whereas when he continuously has the ball in his hands, he can make the right play and is more confident with it. So I hope we can see this moving forward here, the last few games of the season. There's really no reason to put Tyus back in that lineup, and I hope that the front office is paying attention to this and realizes, all right, let's just cut our losses here with Tyus. We didn't deal him at the deadline, but let's not double down on a mistake here. That's really what I hope happens here towards the end of the season, going into the off season.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if they brought Tyus back if they just were making him the backup point guard. Because, I mean, if you're getting 48 minutes of solid point guard play, if Poole, let's just say Poole sustains at this level, right? Where he's a, let's say a pretty good point guard in the NBA, right? And Tyus is his backup, I think that'd be fine because you need good point guards and Tyus can play. It's just, he doesn't need to be your 32, 33 minute per game starter. I mean, he just doesn't need to be that. But I know Tyus probably would be looking to start if he was going to be on a team of the Wizards caliber. If he's going to be a backup, he might as well go be a backup for a competitive team. So, I understand that counterpoint. But I agree with you. I think that they probably could find a cheaper option at backup point guard that could be another steadying hand, just like, Tyus could at probably a fraction of the cost, because I'm assuming that Tyus will have a pretty decent market and to get like the mid-level exception or something like that. He's that kind of caliber of guard, so that might be more than the Wizards would even want to pay him if he's not going to be the starter. But I think it is interesting to kind of think about what the front office thinks, because sometimes this late season stuff can be a little bit wonky, and you don't want to necessarily judge, take too strong of an impression from the last 20 games of the season, where a lot of teams have injured players, a lot of teams are playing these makeshift lineups. I mean, I don't know if you've seen what the Blazers got going on, but they had, though, there are some nights they're starting five rookies, and they got Delano Banton, who has game. I'm not trying to play him or act like he sucks, but he was a guy that couldn't sniff the floor for the Celtics. And when he did, he didn't look good and got traded to the Blazers. And now he's putting up 30 points on the regular, 30, 35 and 5 on the regular basis. So my point is, it's like, would you take away from that if you're the Blazers? Oh, Delano Banton is the next, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know what to do with that. Delano Banton dropping 30 points, frequently. So I say that to say, I don't know exactly what to take away from Poole's kind of like this resurgence of Jordan Poole here. But I do think that if I was the front office, I would look at this and say, Poole's gonna be here. Let's give him the keys next year. Like, let's give him the keys to be the point guard, and let's do it. My only question with that, and I want to ask you this, Chase, is, let's just say the Wizards get like the fourth pick, and the best player available is Nikola Topic, right? Who's a point guard. I believe he's Serbian, but a guy that would be coming from overseas. Do you think that Jordan Poole being at point guard should influence the draft board, right? Like, if Topic is the guy, they say this is the best guy on the board right now that we see could, that we have, think has the most upside. Should that even factor into to their decision in your eyes?
Honestly, I don't think it should, and I'm glad that he's playing well again, but I don't think they should be basing any future draft picks on anything that they currently have in the building, because I just don't think your best player on your roster is currently on the roster. And what I mean by that is I don't think the best player on the next good Wizards team is currently on the roster. And maybe Jordan Poole is still on the team, but I don't think he's the best player on that team, if that makes sense. So I'm not blocking anybody being drafted because of Jordan Poole. I think we should be taking the player that this front office believes takes this Wizards team to the next level quickest, or is the next piece towards that good Wizards team. So if that happens to be a point guard, by all means, take the point guard that makes this franchise a legitimate franchise here, because I think we're still a few years away for sure. So I'm not blocking anything out because of Poole. I think Poole can definitely thrive in that six man role that we've been seeing as well. So as long as he's playing point guard, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel like I wouldn't want this late season success to influence the decisions in the draft. I think that, like you mentioned, they got to be open to taking any position, no matter they need to take best player available. I just wouldn't want Poole's late kind of resurgence to impact if they think a guy like Topic is the best player available, or the Castle Kid or something like that, someone else that plays point guard or on ball or that type of thing. I wouldn't want them to make a decision based on what Jordan Poole's currently doing right now. So we're in agreement on that. Just to give you guys, before we wrap up the Poole conversation here, he's been averaging 23.3 points per game, 6.8 assists, four rebounds on nearly 50% shooting over the last four games. And it's been about a plus 19 overall, plus minus during that stretch. And those numbers come from Greg Finberg of the Wizards podcast. Shout out to him. So those stats are on his Twitter. So I'm stealing them from there. So thank you for having those easily accessible for me. But so I think overall we have a lot to be excited about in terms of pool, and it'll be interesting to see how things go the rest of the season. I'm glad that like he's able to turn it around this season, and he's not going into the off season on such a low. Because I mean, these guys hear stuff, right? And you go online, and our fan base was just ripping him to shreds. And I mean, rightfully so. He wasn't playing well. So, but it's I'm glad that if he can kind of end on this somewhat of a high note, playing the position he's comfortable with, he can go into the off season with something to build off of, and that can be a positive for him going forward. So I'm excited for maybe us getting an even better version of Poole next season.
Yeah, not even just our own fan base. All of these sports pages love to clip every pool low light and post it every single night. So the fact that he's playing good basketball, I have not been seeing low lights from Jordan Poole here in the last few weeks. So all in all, I'm happy with how he's been playing, and I'm excited to see if he can be the future point guard here.
Yeah, well, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the center position. So the big man from overseas, our second round pick from this past draft, Tristan Vukcevic, came over. I believe he's played in two games so far. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Chase, but he's played pretty sparingly. We talked on the last podcast about our expectations for Tristan, and we both said that we thought that they were going to ease him in, but I didn't think it was going to be like he's playing 3 minutes and like 6 minutes and barely playing, which I've been a little bit unhappy with. But I think that he's looked pretty good when he has played, and he definitely has a nice shooting touch. But what have been your impressions of Big Vuk so far?
Yeah, so he has technically played three. They threw him out there for literally 3 minutes in his first game, and he had like one rebound. So I don't know if we can really count that one as his day. I count his next game as his debut, really, where he actually got some actual minutes. Nine minutes, 6 points on 2 3-pointers. One of them was a really nice step back. We're seeing the offense in his limited time. I wish we would see a little bit more of it, of course, because while I've really liked what I've seen from Marvin Bagley and what I've seen from Holmes, they're really, in my eyes, probably just stopgap kind of centers. So we've now brought Vuk over here for the remainder of the season, paid him a pretty sizable, chunk of money to bring him over here for the season. So the fact that they're not getting him out there more, I understand they want to take their time with him, maybe ease him into the team because he's just coming over. But to me, he's 21 and he's showed a lot of potential already in summer league. At the NBA draft combine is where we first saw him and really were intrigued by him. But every time we've gotten to see him, he's shown a little bit on offense to really intrigue at least me. So for whatever reason, I hope that we can get some more minutes for him moving forward, and I'm sure we will. But it needs to be more than the 4 minutes that he had against Brooklyn. That doesn't make sense to me. Let's get a little bit more time for Vuk because every time he's gotten to showcase himself, he's looked good. So I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, it pissed me off when Anthony Gill was out there last night, and Holmes left the game halfway through with some type of toe injury, and I thought Bagley played pretty well yesterday, but those guys weren't in the game and they had Gill out there, and I thought to myself, Gill literally playing him just is like a zero to me. I mean, it's not even that he was bad when he played. It's not even that. It's just there's nothing to gain by playing Gil. Like there's zero. Like I honestly think there's more to gain from playing Holmes or Bagley because you never know. Like you might be able to revitalize Holmes's value or something and trade him again. Like it's just in the best case scenario. Or like same with Bagley. You never know if he plays well enough, some team might be able to talk themselves into giving up 2 seconds for him or something like that. But no team is talking themselves to anything that has to do with Anthony Gill. He does nothing for you. So playing him over Vuk or even like Patrick Baldwin getting minutes at the five, it drives me crazy when he's out there, because it's just there's just no benefit to it. The Wizards are more than likely going to lose the game anyway. So I'd rather just lose the game with Vuk, or lose the game with Baldwin, or lose the game with guys that there's actually some benefit to them being out there. But Gil, to me, literally is like if they put the jersey on an assistant coach and sent them out there. Like, there's no reason for him to be on the floor. I understand that, like, he's a steady hand, a vet. He's gonna be in the right spots. He's gonna play hard. I get all that. But I'm talking about from a just a like an asset, someone that you need to get minutes, someone that's gonna be here on the team next year that you're trying to get a longer look at. It's like there's just Gil doesn't fall into any of these categories other than he's an old vet type that you can trust. And I'm so anyway, that's my Gil rant for the day. I'm just frustrated that he was even out there, but I don't understand why Vuk is only playing 4 minutes. Now, when he first played that first game, he played 3 minutes, and my thought was he is coming from overseas, and that time change and like the conditioning and all that, like I understand you just kind of might want to get his feet wet, but we're past the point now where he that like the time change should be a thing. So why is he playing 4 minutes? I don't get that. That's really frustrating to me. But from what we've seen of him, the defense is going to be a concern. I think that we all know that, and I don't expect him to look good on defense at this point coming in this late to the season. He's not going to be as familiar with the scheme as his teammates are. Like, he's just it. There's no chemistry there because he hasn't had any reps with his teammates. So I don't really expect the defense to be good, but I'm really just trying to see how he looks on offense. And he has he has confidence in his jumper, and he shoots it like it's gonna go in every time. And I like that. I like that about him. He has that demeanor that he's confident in his game on offense. So I'm really excited to see what he looks like in summer league. I'm assuming that he's gonna play in the summer league. I hope he does. And I'm really excited for what he can be going forward, but I definitely think that they gotta play him at least 20 minutes in a few of these games coming up, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And being 21 years old, he definitely doesn't look 21. Funny enough, I was at my parents' house the other night and watching the game with them, and he came in the game and they announced he was 21. My mom's like, "He looks like he's like 35." I was like, "He kind of he looks old, man. He looks like a veteran out there."
He
So,
came back with the beard and like the cut, and he like his hair's
yeah.
cut shorter, and he definitely looks like he's like in his late 20s now.
Yeah, he looks like a mature basketball player, even just in confidence
Yeah.
out there. So I hope we can get him more minutes down the stretch. It doesn't make any sense to not. So let's see what he can do. He's 21 years old and I think already showing a lot of offense. So I think the sky's the limit for our second round pick. Finally, I think we at least got a decent player with a second round pick. I think I can comfortably, in the limited minutes, say that he's not going to be an awful basketball player.
Speaking of centers, another center on the roster who's been playing well of late has been Rashawn Holmes. Obviously, he came over in the Gafford trade, but Holmes is a player that hadn't really been in a rotation for 3 years now, really. He kind of had a lot going on when he was with the Kings, like outside of basketball, and then he got traded to the Mavs, and he wasn't really playing for them. So when he came over, I know there were really no expectations when he came in the Gafford trade, but we're seeing that he still has something left in the tank. He plays hard on both ends. He's not a phenomenal defender or a phenomenal offensive player, but he's a hustle guy, and he's a guy that's gonna compete. And if he gets like 28 minutes, he's gonna have a double double. He's gonna give you 10 and 10. And I think that he's been exactly what the Wizards have kind of needed in there in terms of just in terms of if you're going to replace Gafford with somebody, like, and what I mean with somebody, like, that's a realistic, like, you're not going to get a player that's better than Gafford in there. It's going to be a lower caliber player. I think Holmes has done an admirable job stepping up and being a solid center, at least for what the Wizards have going on. Now, would you want him to be your center if you were trying to compete for the championship? No. But what the where the Wizards are, I really I think that that trade looks even better now that Holmes is giving you solid production between him and Bagley. As I mentioned on a previous pod, that they could give you like 80% of Gafford. It honestly might be a little more than that at this point. But I think that they got an okay center rotation now. It's not going to be great when you have Bagley and Holmes. It's not going to be phenomenal, but I think that they have a solid center rotation now. What have been your impressions of Holmes in the center position overall for the team?
Yeah, I had really liked you had put out your tweet that you had mentioned that they could be 80% of Gafford and get a first round pick. And I think that's a net gain. And I completely agree with that. So I really liked your tweet on that. But all in all, I've been really impressed with Holmes myself. I was not expecting him to have really anything left. I think I probably mentioned that on a couple pods ago that I really had no expectations for Holmes moving forward. If he ends up being a backup for us, wonderful. But I felt like there had to be a reason why he's out of so many rotations in the NBA now. It's multiple teams that he was not in the rotation for. So I didn't have expectations. So he's exceeded my expectations. He's a dog, and I think really any content his money is one thing. So money aside, I think that's the perfect player for a lot of contending teams who need like a third big who's just an absolute dog, just fights, will get you a board when you need a board. I've really enjoyed watching him really grind when he gets in the game. He's an effort player on a team that lacks effort players. So I've really enjoyed watching Holmes recently. I think he brings you something that Bagley doesn't, and I think Bagley gives a lot of things that he doesn't. So there's, I think they really do go together pretty well as far as a center duo. Are they the best center duo in the league? No, they combine don't make a top 10 center rotation, but they have been very competent compared to what we've seen previously. When Gafford was not in the game, we saw Mike Muscala, we saw Danilo Gallinari. So if we're comparing him to those centers when Gafford wasn't in the game, and even sometimes when Gafford was in the game, he wasn't by any means, I think, an elite rebounder. Rashawn Holmes, I would say, is actually exceeding Gafford in the rebounding area. So there's things that he gives you that can make up for Gafford. There's obviously going to be rim running and things that you can't emulate that Gafford does, but I think they've done a really good job as a center duo filling in for Gafford, and I think making a competent center rotation, and you throw Vuk in there, hopefully maybe splitting some time here with Holmes and even maybe taking some minutes from Bagley, see what he can do. I think he brings yet another thing that those two don't. So as a center trio, if I think all three of these guys will probably be in the building next season as well. Let's see what this center trio can do. I think that's a relatively good center rotation.
I think you made a great point about how Bagley and Holmes, like they each bring something the other doesn't. Like Holmes, or excuse me, Bagley has a little bit more stretchability. Like he can knock down a three. He can do a little off the bounce if he needs to. He kind of, Bagley used to be more of a 3-4 type before he got to the NBA. He was a guy that played on the perimeter a lot more than he does in the NBA. And then, in the NBA, that didn't translate. So he had to kind of, like we've talked about way earlier when we got Bagley, about how he kind of had to find what he was good at in the NBA, because what he was good at in high school and college didn't necessarily translate the same way to the NBA game. So he's kind of had to find a niche. But he does have a little bit more pop off the bounce. It can shoot a little bit. And Holmes doesn't have that. That's not going to be what Holmes does. Holmes is going to be a roll man with a little push shot or a dunk at the rim. He's not a high flyer. So he's not, like you mentioned, not going to catch lobs and stuff like that. But one thing about both of them, I think they've both been outcasts in a lot of ways from previous spots. So you're playing guys that are hungry. So you know how sometimes when like the I remember what there was the one Wizards team that had like Austin Rivers and Markieff Morris and like that iterate Jeff Green and a bunch of guys that were on 1 year contracts, but they were guys that had a lot of ego, so it was like it just was a weird mix of personalities that were all playing for like selfish reasons, and it looked like that on the court, like they just had no chemistry, it was all over the place. And why I'm bringing that up is I think this is a situation where them being on 1 year contracts and being outcast actually benefits the Wizards team. Because if you're Rashawn Holmes or you're Marvin Bagley, who's to say if y'all can't make it work here, who's to say y'all are even going to be in the league after this? So, and I don't mean that in like a way to be harsh, but Rashawn Holmes, if he doesn't show he can play now, he probably will be out the league. Like, I'm being serious about that. Like, he probably would be out the league. Bagley probably could find a home somewhere else and, you know, as a, you know, a 10-minute per game guy or something like that if he doesn't make it work here. But I think that they both are looking at this opportunity. And Holmes, to me, is playing like it. Like, oh, they're going to play me 30 minutes a night because Bagley's hurt. Like, okay, this is my chance to show people that I can still play in the NBA. Like, I didn't just forget how to play basketball. And I think we're seeing that. It took a few, you know, it took a little bit for him to kind of get acclimated to being in DC and all that. Like, you know, and but once he kind of got a few games under his belt, we've seen, like you said, a dog, a hustle guy, and we've seen the best version of him. And like you said, it's not, he doesn't have a pretty game. It's not going to look, you know, magical out there, but he's just a guy that's going to give, if he gets 28 minutes, he'll give you 10 and 10. He's going to compete on the boards. He's going to compete on defense. It's not always going to look phenomenal, but he's a solid center. So I like having both of them. And it's, I like it even more that they were able to turn Gafford into a first round pick. And I wonder, I would almost wonder where the people that were really up in arms about the Gafford trade, not to even say they were wrong, but I wonder how they feel about it now. Like, I kind of wish I could poll those people and say, well, how do you feel about it now? Do you feel like the trade makes more sense now that we've seen that Holmes can play some, or kind of where are those people at? Now, I think there was a win-win trade. If you look at what Gafford's doing for the Mavericks, I mean, he's actually been really balling for them, but his game is better, is put to better use playing alongside better players. So him playing off of Luka and Kyrie, I mean, he looks phenomenal, but he just didn't have that resource of that level of player here in DC. So his flaws got magnified. So I think it's a win-win. I think Gafford is much better off with his skill set being put to perfect use in Dallas. And I think the Wizards are better off. Like, the pick matters more to us probably than anything. And they're going to still have competent center play. They kind of got a nice mix of like Holmes is a, you know, a vet in his 30s. Bagley's a young vet. And then now they have Vuk, who's like the rookie type vet, or not vet, the rookie type player that kind of that they can grow. So I think they have a good balance of experience levels. And I like it. I think that you can't, it's hard to be disappointed with what we've seen from Holmes since he's become a Wizard.
I completely agree. And he's under contract for next season, so he's going to be here. So I'm excited to see him play well at the end of the season. We don't need to put our players in a box and say, oh, he can't be on the next good Wizards team, because why not? Like, obviously Holmes, he probably wouldn't be on the next good Wizards team. He's a little bit older, but why couldn't Bagley be on the next good Wizards team? Like, it's very possible that these guys could become better and be good for a long period of time with the Wizards. So to see them end the season, obviously this becomes silly season, and we can't necessarily take everything we see at the end of the season as as gospel and say this is the player he is, because we see this every single year with many different players. Ball out towards the end of the season, come back next year and they stink. That's unfortunately the case in the NBA quite often. So I hope they can continue producing at this level. It's still not a top 10 center rotation, so we can praise them all. We're praising them because they deserve it, but at the same time, we could very well make moves in the offseason and these guys aren't in the rotation anymore. So ball out while they can and put good film together for whether it's for the Wizards or for another team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think part of it too is you never know what team might see the film of Bagley or Holmes playing well and offer you, even if it's 1 second round pick, just so they can get a another body to soak up minutes. I mean, it's just about having guys that can actually produce at a solid NBA level. And that maybe you could turn it into some type of asset down the road, or maybe their asset is simply just giving you competent play, and you need that for your young guys. You need young guys to have vets to look up to help them learn the ropes and things like that. And you know, regardless of how you and I feel or the fan base feels, one of the highest ranked prospects is Sarr, who's a center, so very well could be. He could be the guy the Wizards draft, and then things look a lot different with the center rotation. Obviously, you can't have Sarr needing, minutes at the five with Bagley, Holmes, and Vuk all playing the five. Somebody would probably be the odd man out of that rotation or have to be moved or whatever. So a lot can change, but I think that as of now, Holmes and Bagley are both playing pretty well as Wizards, for what the expectations are for him. And I think that's good going forward. But Chase, let's talk a little bit about like the rebuild in general. I wanted to kind of compare rebuilding situations. Now, other rebuilds around the NBA are like the Pistons, right? The Pistons are probably in year three of rebuilding. The Rockets are in probably, I guess, like year three-ish. They're at that point where they're kind of on the upswing in terms of they've added like some vets around their young core to try to take the next step. Then we have OKC, who's, I mean, if you look at OKC situations, it's pretty incredible that their second best player or third best player, depending how you look at it, but their second and third best player are both, one's a rookie and one's a second year player. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And obviously Shai is incredible. So it's, they're working with the possibly the MVP of the league on their team, so it's different. But I'm even Josh Giddey's a third year player, and they're competing for the number one seed in the West. So that rebuild has obviously gone incredibly. But I wanted to kind of take a look at the different rebuilds because there's just a lot of discourse period about rebuilding. What's the right way? Like, the Wizards tore things down finally after all these years. We're going to be kind of doing like what the Rockets did, was they traded away Harden. They started kind of with just nothing, had a bunch of bad seasons where it really looked terrible. It kind of obliterated their culture in terms of just the product was really bad. But I was watching the Rockets last night, and not only does Jalen Green look amazing, I mean, they have so much young talent. It made me tweet about it that like we wasted these years with Beal, chase the beat in the towards the end of the Beal era chasing mediocrity, that I was about to say the Texans, the Rockets bottomed out for 3 years, and you look up and they've had a lot of losing, and their culture has been off, but they have Jalen Green, they have Şengün, they have Jabari Smith Jr., they have Amen Thompson, they have Cam Whitmore. I'm forgetting somebody off the top of my head, but not to mention, I mean, they've had to move some of these young guys that they've had because they had so many young guys on the roster, and they have another top pick coming, I believe in a trade. I forget who they got, who the trade was with, but it's another top like eight pick coming this year too. And I'm looking at that situation. I'm just like, yo, like this could have been the Wizards, man. Like this could have been the Wizards if they had made the decision 3 years ago to trade Beal when his value was at peak value. They could have been we could be on the upward swing now where we have some of these blue chip prospects that were in the top four of drafts instead of picking in the back half of the top 10. If we picked up the top half, we could have really had a chance for these difference makers. And I can't, every time I watch the Rockets, it's like, I mean, a guy like Amen Thompson, who doesn't even know how to play NBA basketball, is like such an impact player just off pure athleticism and like want to. And I'm like, man, like, and so this isn't about the Rockets necessarily, but I kind of wanted to look at like that direction But then you have the opposite end of the coin of like the Pistons, where they've been doing this for 3 years. They have Cade, who, if anyone's listening to this pod, they know I'm a big fan of Cade. But, they have Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Oscar Thompson, and a few other young guys. But they've been kind of an embarrassment this year. And there's a lot been made of like, is Cade as good as, is he kind of meeting expectations of what people thought? And if you look on like Pistons Reddit, Pistons discourse, the fan base doesn't know what direction they should go, because it's kind of hard to know what to do with some of these young guys. Like, how good is Jaden Ivey? How good is Jalen Duren? Should Isaiah Stewart be a part of the core going forward? And you kind of are seeing both sides of the spectrum here, where you have this Rockets team who is kind of starting to get things right. Like, they've hit on a lot of their picks. And they got the coaching part right, and now they're kind of starting to hit that trajectory upwards. And then you have the other side of the coin, where the Pistons, where I think you could argue they have a good pool of young talent, but the team has no direction. So, in your opinion, Chase, like, what do you think about kind of like the path of the rebuilds that we see around the league? I'm using the Rockets and the Pistons as an example, and kind of like, where do you see the Wizards' trajectory? Like, how does that relate in your mind?
Yeah, it can go either way with a rebuild. Like, you can absolutely tank the way that the Wizards are tanking, and it could very well never translate to any success. We've seen that in the past with teams such as, oh, I don't know if we can consider the way Sacramento tried to do things that, but they were bad for what, like 20 years? They didn't make the playoffs for the longest time, and that's absolutely a possibility when you're resetting and rebuilding the way the Wizards are. But as we're seeing here with teams like OKC, teams like the Houston Rockets, these are teams that have built it from the ground up, and we're now seeing the dividend, especially a team like OKC, who's really built it all through the draft. That's exactly how I think the Wizards need to do this. We're not necessarily going to be a free agency destination anytime soon, at least. Obviously, if you build a continued contender, maybe that becomes a free agent destination for you. But as of now, the Wizards haven't been good for a couple decades now. So they're going to have to build this through the draft. We're seeing teams like Houston get pick after pick after pick. It looked real bad last season, and it looked like they had absolutely no direction, and they just get the right coach in the building, and all of a sudden they look like a real NBA basketball team. And that's very well what could be the problem here. We haven't really had, I think, that real coach, and it's going to take a few years here for sure. We're in year one of the rebuild, and we have to understand it's probably going to be like this next season because they do want that top pick in the 2025 draft. But after that, 2025, 2026, that's when you need to start seeing the trajectory move upwards. And we're seeing it for a team like Houston, and we're not seeing it for a team like Detroit. And it's you obviously hope that you're the Houston on the Houston side of things as opposed to the Detroit side of things, that is, it just never has translated for them. And they have talent in the building. They just clearly don't have the right coach, I think, for them. And Troy Weaver is not absolved of any blame. He's put together a decent young core, in my opinion, but he obviously hasn't got the right vets in the building and the right coach. So they've done the rebuild all wrong. So take note of what Detroit has done, and do not do that. Take note of what you guys did in OKC, and build from that, because that's the blueprint I want my team to build off of. We obviously aren't going to have the draft assets that they started with, making that Paul George trade. They had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander they got back in that trade and a million first round picks. We're not going to have that to work with, but they've already done a good job of accumulating second round picks. Now they've gotten another first in the Gafford deal. They're making their way towards being a not an OKC, but as good of an OKC build as we possibly can. And I love that direction. So you have to hit on the draft picks. If you don't hit on the draft picks, they'll be looking for new jobs in a few years. So that's the most important thing. If you're going to build through the draft, you got to hit through the draft.
I think there's a lot of valuable lessons to be learned from each of the three franchises that we've talked about. I think one of the things that comes to mind to me when I think about OKC and the Rockets is they've had a lot of young guys in the door the past 3 years that aren't still on the team. And I'm talking about like OKC had Trey Mann, who's playing pretty well for the Hornets, but he was a first round pick that's not on the team. Pokuševski is on the Hornets too, ironically. He got cut this year and is on the Hornets now too. And I think Poku, I don't ever think Poku is going to be like a high level NBA player, but I think he's shown flashes of having talent. It's just OKC has had so much young talent that you only can play so much. But I really think that the lesson in this is there's been a lot of swings that the Rockets and the Thunder have taken. If you look at the Rockets, they had to, I forget whether they traded or cut, but they had to get rid of Usman Garuba and Ty Washington this going into the season. And those guys were recent picks. They picked Şengün 16th, I believe. I'm trying to think of the recent picks, but they got Cam Whitmore at pick 20. Like, so I'm thinking about all these different things. It's like they've had a lot of young guys in the door that are no longer on the team, but this is part of the rebuilding process. You're not going to hit on every pick. So some people might look at it like, oh, well, they missed on Garuba or they missed on Ty Washington. But I look at it like this is the point of why you want to trade a Gafford for a late first round pick, because maybe that pick ends up being a hit or maybe it ends up being a miss. But what it is another swing. And the Rockets have taken a lot of swings. And now, but if you look at their team, they literally have six guys who could potentially, if they were on the Wizards, might be the best prospect on the Wizards. Literally six guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, any one of these guys you could say could be the best prospect that the Wizards have had in years. And you just watch these guys, they have so much athleticism, and it's like these guys just pop off the screen too. It's like they might not know how to play basketball, but they pop off the screen when you watch the games. And I envy that as a fan. I'm like, this would be fun, even if we were losing. Just like the flashes you see on defense from Bilal. Remember how excited we were when he first saw those flashes? When you watch the Rockets and you see Cam Whitmore and Amen Thompson come in the game off the bench, it's like, oh man, like these dudes, and they're like 19 years old. It's crazy. That's what I want the swings. Like, this is how you rebuild, is by having multiple swings. And not every player or every young prospect is going to be a star, but you just, oh, I forgot to mention Tari Eason was the other one I forgot to mention. I knew I was forgetting one of them. Tari Eason, I mean, he's looked really good too. And he's been hurt this year, a lot of the year, but he's looked good really too when he's played, for the Rockets. So I think that's one of the lessons. And on the other side of the coin with the Pistons, one thing I'm afraid of for our rebuild, and it's just because things always go bad for the Wizards, is the Pistons have Cade, right? And if you catch Cade on like the right night, he looks like he's already an all-NBA player. But if you catch him on another night, there's a lot left to be desired. And that's kind of the ebbs and flow of a young player. But his teammates do nothing to help his cause. Like, his teammates and his coaching do nothing to help him. And I know I probably sound like a Cade apologist, and I am admittedly, like, I like Cade, but I don't like him to the point where I would lie about what's going on. Like, I just feel like he's not set up for success. And what I worry about is, like, we're going to get the top pick in, like, potentially, like, we could get the top pick in this draft. And say we draft a guy like Sar. And, you know, regardless of what people think about him, a lot of places have him projected as the top prospect. Let's just say that's who we draft. He's going to be a guy that's going to need to be put in the right situation to succeed. Like, he's not going to be this prospect like that you could put anywhere and he's going to be the guy and can just go from day one. It's just not going to be that situation. So he's going to need the right structure around him. And can the Wizards provide that? And if they can't, what the discourse is going to be, especially if the players are the number one pick, is going to be, oh, he can't play, or he's not that good, or whatever. And Cade's a much better prospect than any of these guys in the upcoming draft. And he gets that a lot. You hear the discourse, it's like, oh, he's not impacting the game. And I'm like, if you watch, these guys are his assists are low because they're missing all the shots. There's no spacing. The coaching is bad. He's basically has the deck stacked against him. And to me, there's been like a malpractice that's going on with Troy Weaver and that team in terms of setting up the young guys to have success. they don't have vets. The vets they do they have had just haven't done a good job. The coaching is bad. So you're setting up these young guys just to get the doors blown off them every night. And then they look demoralized when you turn on the TV before the game even gets going. They look like they know they're going to lose. And it's like I worry about that for the Wizards is how can they kind of do a job, a good job of putting these young guys in positions to have a good foundation to build off of and not just be like bad coach, bad team, bad vets. How can there be a good infrastructure so we're setting up whoever our top pick in this draft is? How can we set them up to succeed so when we are in year two, year three, year four, whatever of this rebuild, retool, whatever you want to call it, how so we look at that. So when we're at that time period, we can be on the upward swing and not just kind of like still stuck in that pit of like, oh, we can't get past this initial phase into that next phase, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a concern. It's possible we can hit the reset button and never get back to the mediocre level we once were. We obviously, when we're hitting this reset button, we're doing this with the intention of becoming OKC. Like that's the exact build that I think with a GM coming from OKC, I think that's what they envision is building things similarly to the way that they've done. So obviously there's concern if you miss on your top picks, we're going to be here a long while. But to the point that I think a lot of us fans have made over the years, you might as well be at the bottom if you're at the middle, because the middle is not at the top. So if you can keep getting swings and keep getting swings there at the bottom of top of the draft boards, eventually you're going to get the one that takes you to becoming a contender and makes you a real franchise. So if we stink, keep swinging until we don't.
And there's a lot worse positions you can be in than Detroit. I mean, I know Detroit's literally terrible, but I mean, if you took that team and just gave you like gave the core their young core and gave it to like Ime Udoka and like a competent GM, I mean not to say Ime is like the best coach in the league, but I mean a coach that you know what I like about Ime, he's hard on those guys and he was hard on Jaylen Brown and Tatum, he's hard on I've seen it. He'll Jaylen Green will be playing bad, he'll be like, yo, come on out the game, man. You're sitting the whole quarter. And this is the guy that's supposed to be the young star of the team. He's like, yeah, come on out right now. Like you're not playing the right way. I will bench you right now for Cam Whitmore. I don't care. Like, I love that approach to coaching. And I mean, he's a great X and O coach too, but he's just hard on them. And I feel like him being hard sets a precedent. And now they're reaping the benefits of how like he was so tough on them early on. And it takes a while for some of the young guys to kind of come around and develop the right habits. But I was listening to Podcast P with Paul George, and they had Şengün on there. And he was saying that he loves the way Ime coaches because it reminds him of the coaching that he had like overseas in terms of like, he was like, the coaching, you know, where I grew up was really hard. Like, and this is reminiscent of that, the way Ime is with us. Like, he's really hard on us. And it's to our betterment. I think that if you gave that Pistons core, if you told the Wizards like, hey, you know what? You could start with Cade, Ivy, Dern, and Ausar right now. I would be over the moon to start with those four. Okay, we can start with those four, our rebuild. Like, oh, we're a 25, you know, win team right now, but we have these four guys. If we get some vets and some coaching around us, like this could actually be something. We could actually grow into something. So I think the players on their team, their young core, isn't necessarily the issue. I mean, you can say what you want, whether you think Ivy is good or, you know, Durant has his flaws or whatever. And so same Cade has flaws too. But I don't think there's any denying that those are some exciting young players. So it just goes to show you how much infrastructure and coaching and the GM and the direction and all that really matter. It really matters. And so you see OKC, I mean, the fact that that team is as good as they are with a rookie center and a second year wing and a third year guard in Shea, who's 25. I mean, that's pretty incredible that they're that good. So that's just go that hats off to what OKC is doing. I don't know how they do it, but it's an impressive rebuild. And so, but it gives me some optimism for hopefully where the Wizards could be down the road, you know?
Yeah, man. We won't stink forever. Whether I'm 60 years old when that is, I hope not.
Right.
I hope it's 4 years away.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chase, before we get out of here, we don't spend a ton of time on it, but who's your MVP this season? We're wrapping up the NBA season. We don't typically talk about things outside of the Wizards, but if you had an MVP vote, who would you go with?
Shai Gilgeous and Jokic and for me, I think you do have to give it to Shai. I don't necessarily love the way Shai plays basketball each and every night. I've come to think he, I don't want to say he's a flopper, but he gets his points in ways that I don't always like. But man, to take that team from the level that they've been over the last 2 years, and he's really just taking that next step this season to becoming that superstar level player. I think he is potentially that MVP. I think that's probably who I'd go with at the moment. And it is back and forth for me. Shai and Jokic. I think maybe some if Jokic hasn't had an MVP yet, maybe a lot of people would be talking more for Jokic. But you know, him having now a couple of them, people tend to want to go to somebody new. And for me, Shai is playing at a you know, whether it's the same level, maybe even a little higher level than Jokic this season, has his team at the top of the Western Conference current moment.
Yeah, I would go with Shea too. I think it's close, but I think the thing about Shea that really gives him the nod in my eyes is just the roster that he has around him. And he has a lot of talent. Clearly, Chet and Jalen, I've been talking about them, can play. And so it's not a matter of like, oh, he's taking in a bunch of guys that can't play. But the fact that his surrounding players are so young and he's literally the vet. On the team, I know they have Dort and Hayward, but in terms of caliber of player, he's the leader. He's the vet, and I mean, God, he's just good, man. He's just such a good NBA player. He's such a star. I mean, good NBA player is not even the way to phrase it. He's a superstar, and I feel like the way he impacts the game on both sides of the ball, he leads the league in deflections. Or at least steals, but I know he's top three in deflections, but he is just a constant nuisance on that end. And he's actually a pretty good on-ball defender too, with his length and his size. He's not phenomenal, like elite in terms of on ball, but he's a good defender overall. And I think he'll definitely get all defensive consideration, if not make a team. But I think what he does on both ends, the responsibility he has on offense, I just think that no one really thought that that team was going to be the best team in the West. And I think that as of this moment, I think Denver is in first, but it's by like a half game or something. And I think if OKC finishes number one in the West, he has to win. I mean, no one thought they were going to be number one. And I know some people were high on them, but for them to already have 50 wins and they were number one for a lot of the season, I just think it has to be Shea. I think Jokic is amazing, and you could give it to him every year, and it'd be hard to argue with that. I think he's the best player in the league. But I always say this: the award isn't the best player. I don't like when people make the argument, well, LeBron's the best player every year, so he should win every year. I'm like, that's not the award, though. It's an 82-game award for the best regular season. It's not about what someone did in the playoffs the year before or whatever. It's literally just who was the best player over this a period of time. And I think it's hard to look the other way from what Shea has done. So I would go with Shea, but the argument for Jokic is definitely there. But I don't think that there's really anyone else I could see having a strong argument.
Yeah, I think it's down to those two. Maybe Giannis at some point. I don't think he's there, but yeah, I'm giving it to Shai now. young superstar just exploding this season to the next level. I wish we had a player like Shea on our roster, and I hope we draft one here in the next couple of seasons. I think 2025 is the year we get our Shea caliber player if we're at the top of the draft boards.
I'm hoping our front office can make something shake this year, and we get a guy that we are that could potentially be at least a number two on a number two going forward. So, I mean, look, if other teams can find, you know, Jalen Williams at the 12th pick or whatever, or that type of thing, like, why can't the Wizards find, you know, one of their star players here with a top five pick or top three pick or whatever. So I'm trying to be optimistic instead of realistic, like I always am. I'm trying to be a little bit more optimistic instead of being like, yeah, you know, I let's just hope. Let's just hope. But Chase, do you have anything else for me before we get out of here?
Somehow we made it through the entire podcast without mentioning we're staying in DC. The Wizards are staying in the Washington in the district.
Yeah, it's true.
I can't say I'm surprised. I wasn't happy with the move to Alexandria, even though that's where I was born. It would be easier for me to get to games living in Virginia, but it's the Washington Wizards. Like, taking it out of DC makes no sense to me. I always enjoy heading back to DC every time I visit, specifically to go to Wizards games. So it not being in DC just wouldn't have felt right for me. Going back to the area and always enjoying everything that DC has to offer when I go back. So I'm excited that they're staying. I don't think Ted is excited about it. And who cares what the billionaire thinks at this time? It's only right that it's staying in DC.
Yeah, I was indifferent about it. I'm happy for the people that wanted it to stay. Let's say that. I think I'm happy for those people. I think it's good for DC, but I didn't have a strong opinion about it. So if you're happy, Chase, I'm happy. let's just say it like that. If my co-host is happy, then I'm happy. So if you're happy with the move, sounds good to me. I don't care about what's good for Ted Leonsis though. So. He's the last person.
Most
I'm
importantly,
about.
Putting money in his pocket is at the absolute back end of my thoughts here.
Absolutely. Well, Chase, I'm gonna let you get out of here. You know, like, subscribe, all that good stuff that I'm supposed to say, and we will catch you guys on the next one.